Senate Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness will come to order. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm reading from Exit Wounds. It's an Iraqi war veteran. And this chapter is actually called The Family Journey. And, you know, the book isn't just for veterans in pain. Chronic pain actually affects everyone in the family, and sometimes more so than the family members. And at the very end, well, to make a long story short, the veteran comes home. He is actually in the hospital, and the parents were actually fortunate that they could take the time to fly to the East Coast to be there with their son, Derek, when he came back. And it was incredibly important that the parents were there, because even though most of the nurses and medical staff were terrific, they couldn't do everything, and we were able to pick up some slack there. And, of course, we were family, which is probably the most important support network any wounded veteran can have. So that's the first thing. If you can go and be with your loved one, go. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Very well stated. Colleagues, members of the public, everybody out there on the internet, we have a rather full schedule today on the Veterans Emergency Preparedness Committee. We've received 5 bills from the House. The agenda is posted. If you're tracking on the agenda, the only change to the agenda is House Bill 4023 will be moved to the bottom of the calendar, because that is the most complex of the issues before us. What we will be doing, colleagues, is we'll have a public hearing on each bill, and then see if we want to move into a work session, finish up that bill, and then just move right down the list. We do have some guests. The good chair from across the way is with us on the first 2 bills, and then we do have several other members on 4023 and 4057 coming, and we'll make time available when they come in. With that, colleagues, we're going to open a public hearing on HB 4021. Council, if you would, please. Mr. Chairman, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4021A requires public universities and community colleges charge in-state tuition of veteran graduate students with either an honorable discharge or a general discharge under honorable conditions beginning September 15, 2014, if physical presence is shown in Oregon within 12 months of enrollment. This measure has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact, no subsequent referral. It moved out of the House committee, chaired by Representative Matthews, and off the House floor with unanimous votes.
Mr. Chairman, welcome to the Senate side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50. And before you today, House Bill 4021, as amended. This is a continuation of the bill that we worked so hard on. And thank you, Senator Wolster, and, of course, my Senator, Lori Montes Anderson. Thanks for your work. And to the good chair and your committee for the offer of in-state tuition for our veterans. This would simply take the good work that was done last session. It would add into the account of graduate schools. It would start with the date prospectively, so we don't have anybody who would be caught in the loop where it would be a fiscal analysis. So we tried to make this as painless as possible for the university system. I think we've done that. We've eliminated the fiscal by the same approach that we took with 2158, and therefore I think it's a good bill. I will say that the number that we've been told, with the wonderful help, and let me just again compliment the great work of Cheyenne Ross, your committee administrator, and ours, for her wonderful work. But we showed initially there was about 38, we believe, 38 veterans that would currently not be entitled to this benefit should this become law. Those are 38 veterans that are currently engaged in the OUS system, in a graduate program, and they would not be able to take the benefit of this law. We had to do that in this bill so that we could get again to the zero fiscal, which was our whole direction the whole time. And so with that, Mr. Chair, we were able to take a lot of what possibly would have been, you know, contentious and remove that from the bill. And I think we have a better bill, and again, another step for our veterans. And I won't comment on where OUS lands or anybody else. I'll just simply say that we didn't have any opposition on the House side in moving forward with the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate your comments, and I think for the record, and you're aware of this, I believe at the federal level at this point, they're marching down a fairly solid road in terms of implementing this on a federal basis for any entity and educational institution in the future that receives federal benefits. So this is going to become the law of the land here very shortly across the nation. We are just slightly on the cutting edge, except for 38 people.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair, do you have comments? I believe you're a co-sponsor on this bill.
No, it's a great bill.
Mr. President?
Yeah. Representative Matthews, you've been a zealot for many causes, and you're an outstanding veteran, outstanding firefighter, and you drive outstanding cars that take like two places to park in the underground and garage. I feel compelled to say something. When your opening remarks, you highlighted Senator Olson and his work, and you highlighted your state senator and her work, and you highlighted our leader, the chair of the committee.
I know where this is going.
And you highlighted our committee administrator and all that she's done. The only person you didn't mention at all, even look at, was the old guy. Now, I feel like I should just crawl out of here and go in the hall. I mean, should I take that personal? Did you understand? He included the. Did you know that? So I'm not going to say I need therapy, but really, I mean, what have I done wrong? I noted these things. I am sensitive. So just thought I'd say that to you.
Chair,
but you're a wonderful person. You're a wonderful person. You dress well. You got all your hair. You're a good human being. I like you. You're a firefighter and everything. So you don't have to say anything more. But I want you to know that I noticed that everybody in this room you mentioned acknowledged Papizzi.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, and to the respective president,
Just leave it alone.
If I had concluded my remarks or perhaps failed to close, then I would say guilty as charged. But, sir, I was saving the best for last. You are somebody that I have known long before I came to the legislature. You are somebody that I was witness to. Your ability to talk about an issue and to give praise to your firefighters. And, sir, you know I have nothing but the utmost respect for you and your ability to move along great legislation. It's been under your leadership. We've done a lot of these things. And so thank you for all you do, sir.
It's too late. It's too late. Tell them it's too late.
And again, it's an honor to be before you, President Courtney.
Thank you.
I would advise you not run for the Senate for a while.
Yeah. I would advise there's no reason to. We have a wonderful Senate in place.
That's right. Okay, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, since I think you're a co-sponsor of this, I think we'll move along.
Do I get a chance to talk?
You want to say something, too.
The good president took copious quantity of time. I just want to thank Representative Matthews for the forethought and the thought to our veterans, to take care of our veterans. We worked very good, very well on the last session, and this is just a great step forward. And I thank you for your work on this.
Proud to be a part of it, my good senator. Thank you.
Thank you. Don't go anywhere.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing on 4021A and open a work session on HB 4021A. Madam Vice Chair.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 4021A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Honorable Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 4021A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Mr. President?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Seeing none, please call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Boquist?
Aye. The motion passes. You're our chief sponsor. Please let the record reflect that Senator Monis Anderson will carry the bill on the floor. And with that, we're going to close HB 4021A, and we're going to open a public hearing on HB 4022A. Madam Counsel, if you would, please, and then we'll go back to the good chair of the Veterans Committee on the House.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4022A creates the Kelsey-Smith Act requiring providers of radio communication service for cellular providers to provide cellular device location information for purpose of emergency response to situations involving risk of death or serious physical harm at the request of law enforcement. Requires cellular service registered in Oregon or subject to Oregon jurisdiction provide emergency contact information by June 15th each year or when the information changes. It requires the Office of Emergency Management to maintain a database of cellular service emergency contact information for disclosure to public safety answering points as specified statewide. It requires OEM coordinate data collection with PSAPs and law enforcement and report to the legislature biennially. It prohibits a cause of action against a cellular service for complying in good faith. There is also an A2 amendment permitting cellular services to provide call location information or the best available location information. This measure in its A version and the A2 amendment have no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact. There is no subsequent referral. It moved out of House Committee 6-1, as an excused member, not a no vote, and off the House floor with 51 and 9 excused.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senate President Courtney. Thank you so much for hearing this bill today, the House Bill 4022. It's a rather interesting and very compelling story, and that's the story of Kelsey Smith. And this is really putting Oregon into what we call the Kelsey Smith Act. And so I'll do my best to make this quick, but it's very important that we understand the story. Kelsey Smith was a young gal at 18 years old, born on May 3rd, 1989. Had gone to a Target store in the afternoon to buy a present for her six-month relationship boyfriend. She wanted to celebrate that occasion. She was never seen again. She was abducted on the way to her car. Video surveillance suggested that that had occurred. She was forced into another vehicle, taken to another location, and she was eventually murdered. So the reason this bill is important and the reason it's necessary is currently law enforcement can request for the ping coordinates of a telecommunication device, and in most cases they get that information. However, this occurred in Kansas. This didn't occur that way, and here's what happened. Law enforcement, her father being a police officer, had requested coordinates of the phone. It took 4 days for those coordinates to be released. In that four-day period, she was raped, sodomized, among other things. Once the coordinates were released in the fourth day, 35 minutes later, they located her body. When they located her vehicle initially in the first investigation, they found her purse, her wallet, everything else, but no cell phone. So they thought the cell phone could be the link to finding her. And they were right, it was. It just turned out to be 4 days later. Didn't have to happen that way. Now, you'll have, I believe, it's loaded into OLIS, if I'm not mistaken, due to the efficiency of our great committee administrator. There's testimony from Senator Greg Smith. That's her father, Kelsey Smith's father. He's now a state senator in Kansas. And you'll notice that he makes a very prominent statement in this. And basically what he says is that it either takes a lawsuit or legislation to make a big corporation pay attention. They chose not to sue anybody for the death of their daughter. In fact, had this bill become law, it still wouldn't have saved their daughter in time. But it's because their daughter's no longer with us that others are. This has been enacted in several states. It has made an impact in several cases. And while I was on the phone this morning with Missy Smith, the mother of Kelsey Smith, the news media showed up at her door due to an Amber Alert where this law was being enacted in Kansas to try to find somebody who is missing. I want to make sure that I put on record that I really appreciated the ACLU coming forward with their concerns. They may share those for you today. They were all concerned that law enforcement didn't have a reporting mechanism, and we do now have that in the bill. Also, telecommunications. Very forward acting on the bill in participation. There are other things, as the good Senate President knows, involving telecommunications that have been contentious along the way that they've come together on, and we've been able to get there, and that's great. This bill wasn't one of them. Every step of the way, they were trying to make this so it was palatable to their organization, so they could work within the confines. And to be honest, Mr. Chair, the way they received the bill was by email. They said, you know, we like to think we'd always do the right thing and that we would do this now, but having a law really forces us to comply. We like the idea of doing this. And so, I don't want to speak for their industry, but having that email sent was meaningful to me. And it allows us to introduce legislation. Otherwise, people might say, why do you need a bill if we can do this now? Well, it's because in some states, they haven't done this now. They needed the bill to get the information. And, I think you know my story, but being a father of three daughters, I want to be able to have that happen instantly, not a matter of a warrant, not a matter of time, not 4 days later. I want it now. If it's my kid, if it's my family, my friend's family, if it's anybody that we know. So that's why we bring the bill forward. This came to me by way of Facebook. I'm not a huge social media guy. I do it because I have to. But the bottom line is a constituent had heard the story, followed up on it, sent me a link last session and said, what do you think about this? And there just wasn't time to get where we wanted to get. This seemed like a great opportunity to bring a bill that's pretty straightforward, pretty simple, and mattered. The only amendments to the bill were made on the House side that were to do with resellers, removing them from the bill. And I believe there may be an amendment being offered on this side that would deal with whether or not technology exists in an area. It would be hard to have somebody comply in the industry if there wasn't the technology that existed in rural Oregon for them to provide the ping coordinate. So we're very open to that. We love being a part of it. It's an honor to do it, and that would be my testimony for the bill. And thank you again, Mr. Chair, for hearing the bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We had the A2 amendment, which is the amendment you sent over. I believe that's the amendment you just commented on.
Yes, sir.
And the House committee was fine with that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Madam Vice Chair, questions?
No.
Mr. President?
Senator Olson?
With that, we have one other person signed up, Daryl Ford with the Sheriff's Association. Is there anybody else that wants to speak on behalf of this bill?
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, we'll send this back to you for concurrence here shortly.
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you, sir.
At least I think we will.
Thank you, President.
He loves you now, Mr. President.
Mr. Fuller, how are you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I want to begin my testimony by praising the hard work of the Senate President on everything that he's done up until now today. I have some testimony on the record. I don't want to belabor the issue other than to indicate that the Oregon State Sheriff's Association has supported the original bill. We saw a couple of minor errors that were corrected in the amendments on the House side. I haven't had a chance to see the amendments on this side, but I'm certain we'll support it. We appreciate you guys working on the bill. I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay. Madam Vice Chair, questions?
And I'll take a leap of faith and say I'm also here on behalf of the Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, because I think Kevin just wasn't able to be here as quickly as he wanted to be.
We'll hold him accountable. Not you.
Thank you.
Senator Olson, comments?
Seeing no comments, seeing nothing earth-shattering, we're going to close the House, the public hearing on House Bill 4022A, open a work session on House Bill 4022A. We do have a -2 amendment, which is the correction the good chair from the Veterans Committee mentioned.
Senator Bocas, I move the -A2 amendments dated 2/17/2014.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves to adopt the A2 amendments dated 2/17/2014. Any discussion, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Mr. Courtney?
Senator Olson?
No.
Any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Bocas, I move House Bill 4022A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 4022A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Mr. President?
No.
Senator Olson? Roll call if you would, please.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Mons Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Boquist?
Aye. The motion passes. You'd be kind enough to carry it, Senator Olson?
Yes.
Thank you. With that, the work session on House Bill 4022A is closed. Colleagues, we're going to move down. I think Senator Witt, or Representative... he's on 4025.
We have to call him. He's on the next one.
Okay. Well, don't quite call him yet. We're going to move to House Bill 4025. With that, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4025. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4025 clarifies that the maximum amount of a home or farm loan made by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to eligible individuals applies to each of four possible loans. Declares an emergency effective on passage. This is a technical fix to an issue that came up in 2013. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no subsequent referral. It was unanimous off the floor and out of House committee.
And this is a committee bill from the far chamber, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Director, if you would, please.
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Departments of Veterans Affairs, and speaking to House Bill 4025 here this afternoon in regards to our veteran home loan program. This is, as you all are very well aware, the original reason why ODVA stood up when the citizens voted in our own unique veterans home loan benefit for veterans and their families. And since that founding after 1945 and after World War II, over $7.5 billion in low-interest loans have been lent out to veterans and their families to help them achieve this small piece of the American dream. I just also, beyond that core benefit of the Veterans Home Loan and that lower interest rate that we can offer with the tax advantage bonds, as you know, it's also this program is also an essential way that we fund our organization in terms of a lot of our support services and wraparound services for our veterans and their families. So it's a key to our funding, and it's a key benefit. And I want to hand over to the actual specifics of the bill to Ms. Lori Skillman, ODVA's Senior Policy Advisor, to talk to the bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lori Skillman. I'm a senior policy analyst for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. This bill just clarifies and adds some certainty about the dollar amount of statutory limitation on the dollar amount for each loan that a veteran may apply for. As you recall, last year we had Senate Bill 34 before this committee, and that bill expanded the number of loans that a veteran may apply for from 2 to 4. One of the things that, looking at the record, there was a lot of testimony about the dollar amount of the loan, which is statutorily tied to the Fannie Mae dollar amount for a residential home loan of $417,000. And there was testimony that that applied to each loan that a veteran may apply for, each of those four loans. However, there's just some ambiguity in the statute that we thought would be helpful to clarify and clean up. So we provided this technical amendment that basically says that this applies to each loan. As you know, a veteran may only apply for a loan for a principal residence. Therefore, they can only apply for one loan at a time. So if there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Mr. Director, I just want to reiterate, we had quite a discussion on this series of topics in the last session. I think you know, I think all the committee members are always interested in where we're going in terms of where we've been, the issues that came up before. I think at a future time, it would be opportune for you to come back and bring us up to date in the discussions that we had last time in terms of the amounts of loans, the volumes, that all of those topics we had before, considering what happened back in the 80s. And you're the new kid on the block, so to speak. And so I just remind you of that. Madam Vice Chair, you had a question.
I'm just a little bit confused as to when it says it clarifies the maximum amount. Can you just explain in easy terms for me what that actually means?
So Chair Boquist, Senator Monis Anderson, the question was, does the 417 need to be divided up over the four loans that they're authorized, or could each loan be up to that maximum amount of $417,000?
And so what?
So we would be moving the statute to clarify that each loan, and only one loan at a time, could be up to that Fannie Mae limit of $417,000. And that should have, really, we should have embedded this in the Senate Bill 34, and we apologize for this cleanup.
Mr. President, question. Senator Olson. Yes. I was fortunate enough last session to have the opportunity to try to get a DVA loan. The process, the approval process was very simple. Getting the loan and finding the resources of people that would actually write the loan was extremely difficult. Cameron, you and I have talked about this, and I just wondered if that process has been smoothed out a little bit or been more defined so that when a veteran is qualified, you can tell him exactly where to go to have someone write the loan.
Chair Boquist, Senator Olson, I would say we're at the beginning stages of that transformation and professionalization of the Veterans Loan Program, both going from heavy process-based, heavy paper-based system, but also one where we have to have the relationships both with the real estate agents, the brokers, the mortgage brokers, and the lenders that will some of that is going to be based on that relationships that we continue to build. We have a new loan program manager in Cody Cox, who we were able to lure away from Housing and Community Services, both with a lot of private sector experience before coming to government and a lot of public sector experience. But they're just, over the last year, we've had about 20 or 30% retire and leave our agency, folks who have been working there for 35 years or more, and are trying to capture their expertise, given that some of these systems are outdated on the IT side and otherwise. But there's this growing excitement as we move forward with a strategic plan in this program both to get better word out to our veterans and their families that this program exists, and then make sure that it's as smooth as possible on the approval and that we have the skids greased in terms of the actual lenders to pull the trigger on that funding. So I think we're at the beginning stages of that, but a huge ramp up, I think, that we can continue to grow. And possibly, as the chair mentioned, as the committee work dies down, if there's a quieter period at the end of February, beginning of March, we'd be happy to come back and give kind of an update on where we are, both on veterans loans or the new veterans home in Lebanon or any of the other moving pieces.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify? Seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2025. 4025. House Bill 4025. You okay with this? I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 4025.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 4025 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 4025 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Mr. President? Senator Olson?
No.
Seeing none, please call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Boquist?
Aye. The motion passes. I'll carry the bill on the floor because it's my turn. With that, we're going to close the work session on House Bill 2025, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4057. Council, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4057 requires certain entities to report to the appropriate legislative committees by October 1st, 2014, on the application of military training or experience toward obtaining licensure, certification, or other authorization to engage in a profession. Declares emergency as effective on passage. It moved out of House Committee and off the House floor unanimously. It has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal with no subsequent referral.
Honorable Representative, welcome to the other side.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Honorable Committee members. For the record, I'm State Representative Gene Wisnant, House District 53. And I'm proud to bring you this bill today, which did pass without opposition in committee on the House and on the floor. This good body, and I'm sure this committee had a lot to do with it, in 2012 we passed House Bill 4063 and House Bill 2037 in 2013. These good veteran bills were designed to help employ our veterans and their spouses and domestic partners. House Bill 4063 directed agencies and boards to award state licenses based upon military training and education courses which are equivalent to state requirements. Also, House Bill 2037 tasked the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission to establish by rule and accept a fast process by which a military spouse or domestic partner who is licensed to teach in another state may apply for and obtain a teaching license. House Bill 4057, which is before you today, tasked Oregon agencies and certain boards to report to interim and statutory committees of the legislature by October 1st, 2014, on their success, helping veterans and their spouses or domestic partners obtain license, certificates, or other authorizations to practice a profession. In other words, we pass good legislation, but how's it working? So this would require the agencies that do this to come to the appropriate committees and say, you know, we've done so many, we're just happy what the timeline is, and if we need further legislation to help this important part of our community regain employment after serving in the military. 4057 will help employ our veterans and their spouses or domestic partners, and I encourage your approval of this bill. And I'm ready for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair.
No, I was just, well, yes, I do. I'm looking at all of the different boards that you have, and
that came from Mr. Chair and Madam Senator. The LC did a great job on this, and they went back and referenced and picked all those agencies that were tasking the other bills to say report back to them.
Okay. So I, when looking at them, I can't think of anyone that we might have missed.
Yeah. That was the objective, Mr. Chair and Senator. That was the objective, not to miss anyone.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Senator Corning, questions? Senator Olson?
No.
Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to testify? Again, this bill came across from the other chamber. With not, thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for sponsoring. And we did have leadership of the Veterans Committee in the House as co-sponsors of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are you okay? With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4057 and open a work session on House Bill 4057.
Chair Bocus, I move House Bill 4057 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Vice Chair Monis Anderson moves House Bill 4057 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Madam Vice Chair? Senator Courtney? Senator Olson?
No discussion. I just volunteer to carry it, if you don't mind.
I love volunteerism. If you would, the roll call, please.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Monis Anderson?
Aye.
Chair Bocus?
Yes, the motion passes. Senator Olson, for the record, will be the carrier of the bill. And with that, we're going to close House Bill 4057. Colleagues, I know the lottery commissioner is going to be here momentarily on a discussion for House Bill 4023. I also want to bring you up to speed on, we sent a bill down to Joint Ways and Means. I don't recall the bill number, but it's the Military Educational PAC. The bill number is?
1506.
I had a discussion with the good chair of, the good co-chair from our chamber for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We have been working with all of the groups, most of them sitting out there in that audience right now. There is an amendment in process, and the co-chair downstairs is awaiting. It's been assigned to a subcommittee, and if we can find a solution for it that doesn't have a fiscal on it, then they are amenable to having a public hearing and a work session downstairs to fix the bill. So that's where we are on the educational compact bill as it stands right now. We're going to go ahead and start a discussion and open a public hearing on House Bill 4023. Council, if you would, please, and then I'll give an explanation of where we are. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4023A permits the dedication of a Warm Springs Veterans Memorial Highway on a portion of U.S. Highway 26 within the Warm Springs Reservation. It also allows 100% disabled veterans to pay the discounted fee for annual medical marijuana cards. Declares an emergency is effective on passage. The measure has two amendments which are before you. The dash A4 is identical to the measure as it was originally introduced. It establishes a lottery raffle game to benefit education and economic development for veterans. It requires the Oregon State Lottery Commission to create a game and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to create a corresponding program. It provides a dedicated accounting structure and has an indeterminate fiscal and a revenue light with a recommendation that it be referred to Ways and Means. The dash A5 amendment states that private employers may prefer to hire and promote service members, veterans, surviving spouses of deceased veterans, and spouses of veterans totally disabled from enemy action or service-related accident. On the A version of the measure, without either the A4 or the A5 amendment, there is a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact and no subsequent referral. It moved out of House committee on a 5-1 with one member excused and off the House floor with a vote of 49-8 with three excused.
Okay. Colleagues, I'm going to try and explain what transpired in the House after discussions with the good chair over there. And they, unlike us, ran out of time because we have plenty of time. We've got still 55 minutes left. There were several bills in the chamber on the far side that either ran out of time, ran out of gas, or something didn't get worked right. They were, in fact, committee bills for the most part that didn't come across. When the clock ran out, there were several members who had member bills or member issues. One of those issues was the naming of a veterans highway that's actually on the Warm Springs Reservation. Those of us that have been here a long time know that the Department of Transportation can't do it on its own, and so therefore it has to be put into statute. And so the proverbial gut and stuff was performed, and several bills on the far side didn't move, not for wanting to move, but for lack of time and other issues and a lack of coordination. When they came to this side of the chamber, we had a discussion with the other side of the chamber to figure out what was transpiring. One of the committee bills on the far side was the continuing the process of discussions in terms of a new revenue generating, not present revenue generating, establishment of a lottery or a veteran or a game at the lottery or a raffle in some case that would benefit veterans. Another issue that came up was aligning the veterans' preference with our side and the previous bills that we had passed in terms of public policy hiring. And so those are sort of the amendments that came out. In discussions
with the good co-chair from the Senate side in Joint Ways and Means, kind of walk down through the options. This, like the other bill I just mentioned earlier, if we can find a voluntary cooperative option that might work in a permissive manner, they are amenable, and I have spoken with the president's staff, and we've kind of arranged that if we can come up with something, we can send it down to Ways and Means, then make one final amendment if we can, whatever we determine to do. So we really have, for better word, a junior veterans and emergency preparedness Christmas tree bill sitting before us, which is a variety of pieces. I think with that, the very first and easiest piece, I don't see Representative Huffman in the room. The one piece that's in the existing bill that I do want to comment for the record so that we know, and that is the portion that designates a portion of U.S. Highway 26 for the Warm Springs Reservation as Warm Springs Veterans Memorial Highway. We have two other bills that are in presently in other committees in which we have commitments to place an amendment into those bills already that takes care of that piece that came into this bill. Furthermore, we also have the option in the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, since it's obviously not a big argument on whether you get a sign on the highway or not, we have discussion, we can stick it in the bill if we have an agreement down in Ways and Means for the other issues that come forward. What I want to do is go back to the original purpose of the bill, and with that, let the lottery director and commissioner come on up, if you would please, and have a short discussion and see if there's anybody else that's on here. I know Cameron Smith is back there. I'm going to drag him up here right now. In terms of, we have been working for several sessions on trying to figure out whether a pilot project or a permissive project or something might possibly work in the lottery to generate new revenue, not old revenue, in terms of veterans. And with that, I'm going to let the director of ODVA just give us a brief background on this and then ask the, I guess you're a commissioner.
Director,
right? Yeah. Then ask the director to give us a little words of wisdom of what options might be out there of restoring this present bill. Senator Olson.
Mr. First. Chair, before we get into their testimony, your explanation of moving the highway to another bill is appropriate, but my question is that the -5 of A5 amendment is related to that. Will that be included in that movement across to another bill?
Run that by me one more time.
The A5 amendment is an amendment for the A engrossed bill.
Right.
So my question, when you move the U.S. Highway 26 section, which is the A engrossed, will you take the A5 amendment with that, or will it fit in that piece?
The A5 amendment is which? Help me here.
Maybe it doesn't even fit.
No, it won't fit in that bill. It would have to remain in the existing bill we have.
Okay.
We have two transportation bills in which we can put a highway sign in.
Thank you.
And we have permission from both sides and carriers and committees and all that stuff to take care of that. And so I want to kind of return back to the lottery veterans funding piece a little bit from the director, and then maybe get some words and wisdom from the director of the lottery and what possibilities permissively might be out there. So if you would.
Good afternoon, Chair Boquist, members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And speaking to that original purpose of House Bill 4023, was similar to many bills that we've seen for veterans this session, that speaks to opportunity for our veterans and their families, and specifically around education and employment. And we've worked collaboratively with community colleges and workforce development and Krista Caldwell and her team, because we know that the partnership with our fellow state agencies, with our local governments, with our community partners is essential if we're going to have veterans and their families thrive in Oregon, well beyond the work of ODVA. And speaking to the content of the bill before the House amendment, we looked at how could we best support our veterans who are coming back to Oregon and going back to school. We chose to specifically work with the community colleges, given both the newest generation of veterans going back to community college campus, as well as some of our adult learners from the Vietnam era on. And as you know, $1.9 billion of federal VA benefits flow back to Oregon in terms of health, disability claims and pension, and education. The education piece is over $120 million going back to scholarships across community colleges and our universities with veterans using the GI Bill. But where we see our role, both from ODVA and from the community colleges, and we'll submit joint written testimony as well, that we want to ensure, you know, the funding is there from the federal VA and the GI Bill for the scholarship dollars, and a great resource for the institutions as well. But we want to ensure that student success, both in terms of the graduation rate and in terms of follow-on employment for our veterans. And one best practice that has been bubbling up on these campuses naturally has been veterans resource centers and veteran resource coordinators. Now, as you know from previous efforts, going back to, I think, 2009, ODVA took on a campus veteran service officer program, trying to bring that formal claims process that our veteran service officers, both at the state and county level, to help draw down more of those federal resources. And have they had a circuit rider mentality going to the different institutions. Where we're looking now in terms of moving forward with our strategic plan and in partnership with the counties on that formal claims process, continue to invest in the county veteran service officers in terms of that direct claims expertise. But what we're finding is there's still a need on campus, not for that formal claims function that can be referred to the counties and not duplicated, but still have that veteran resource coordinator that is a center of gravity on campus, that's an advocate, that is a mentor, that is a peer, and a coordinator. It's both an advisor and a support to veterans and veteran student groups, and we've seen it work incredibly well both at OSU on the university side, Clackamas Community College, PCC, Rock Creek has some great models and some great testimony that we had on the House side. It's also to help connect them to resources, whether down to the county veteran service officer or within the college resources or the broader community. The veterans resource coordinators also work with staff and faculty to understand veterans reintegration, and they are on the community college staff and embedded in that community college campus. And our starting point always for our veterans as they return home, they have the leadership, the skills, the core values that they've learned on the battlefield and in their service, and we know that they can transition back home using those same skills, but it is very much a transition and a reintegration home. We want to, you know, moving forward, we are going to look for every way that we can partner with the community colleges and our other agencies to best support them. And as a recovering history major, the time is right for this work, both across education, employment, healthcare, and all the other issues. I want to note that February 19th, the 69th anniversary that the Marines landed on Iwo Jima in 1945, and that we're still a country at war, and we had our most recent casualty of a Special Forces Army soldier, 22 years old, Specialist John Alexander Pelham, and his funeral will be Monday of next week. So unprecedented that we're serving four generations of veterans and their families across five major wars. And we're just dedicated to this work moving forward, and we appreciate all the support. And happy to turn it over to Director Roberts for the actual specifics on the lottery mechanisms.
Director, welcome to Veterans and Emergency Preparedness.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the director of the Oregon Lottery, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this bill. We've been following this bill, but no one has really asked for any input from us, and so we've not been doing that until I saw it today. It was coming back, and there's been some contentiousness around that, and I thought, well, we might as well let you know how we would handle this if it passed, and see if that helps in terms of your determination what to do. First thing I want to make clear is that we raise the money, but the legislature decides where it gets spent. So we're not siding with one source or use of the funds or another, but we do take pride in the raffles that we run. This is not a major part of our revenue, but we've had considerable success with it. We've run, I believe now, 9 of these, and we have sold out every one. And our goal is to continue to use these sparingly because the overuse of them can make it unsuccessful. For those of you who maybe aren't familiar exactly with the mechanism of how this works, raffles are not like a lot of these things you read about, Powerball and other items, where the amount that you get depends on how many people buy tickets and it grows. With a raffle, you set the amount in advance. You limit the number of tickets you're going to sell, and basically you need to, the way it's set up, you need to sell about 75% of your tickets to break even after you pay the prizes and you pay the expenses and to do that. And as I said, we are proud of the fact that we've sold on every one of them, and that's because we do use it sparingly. Currently, we are planning to do 3 this year. We did 2 last year and are currently scheduled to do 2 next year. We're in the middle right now, or almost finishing up actually, with the St. Patrick's Day, and we're on track to sell this one out as well. We have one scheduled for the 4th of July, and we have one scheduled for Halloween. So for this biennium, there are 5 lotteries that are or rallies that are raffles that are already set up, and that money is a part of what we've already projected and that's already being appropriated. If we were to do an additional raffle in this biennium, that would be, we believe, additional money, because as we run these, we don't think that takes from other projects as long as we do them sparingly. And the same token, we haven't budgeted yet for the next biennium. If this bill were to pass, directing us to do a raffle, it doesn't say whether it would be an additional one or an existing one, but what I would say, we would not try to replace an existing one. We would add that. And the natural one would probably be for us to add a 4th of July raffle for 2015, which currently we do not have planned, because we're planning to do one in the early part of the year and one in the later part of the year. And those would straddle the two biennium. So if we added that 4th of July, it would meet the requirements of this bill, which says that you have to start selling the tickets on or before July 1, 2015, but the raffle would actually be completed 4th of July, which would be in the next biennium. It would be additional money above and beyond what's already been appropriated or planned for, and so it wouldn't have an impact on the existing recipients of lottery money. This bill also seems to only provide for one. It doesn't say it's a pilot, but that's sort of what it is. And so we believe that if this were passed, what we could do is plan to do that as a lottery for the 4th of July of next year. And the money from that, under the terms of the bill, would be dedicated for veteran services. And so from our standpoint, it doesn't affect how we operate, and it doesn't really sound like it would affect the current recipients. Now, I understand the concern some people have that if this is successful, people will start lining up and they'll want to, everyone wants to have their own, like the Oregon license plates. That's a policy decision for you guys to make and decide about. But from our standpoint, we would welcome the opportunity to do a lottery based on veteran services, if that's what you decide to do. And we don't think that it would impact any of the things that we're currently funding or that we're doing in terms of our activities.
It's really, Mr. Chair, what we're talking about is if we took the existing language and kind of reframed it and made sure it was permissive, optional. We do identify that it's only one-time test case and kind of a pilot study because it's above and beyond. And that also gives the latitude for the commission to decide whether to go forward or not do it if it turns out the economic analysis says, no, it's going to take away and we really shouldn't do it. You kind of let, for better word, so many times we do here a test bed or a pilot study. That's sort of the thing that you're saying is possible or optional if we move forward.
We could certainly do that. And I mentioned the 4th of July. Another option would be to do one which we've not done before for Memorial Day of next year. We would not want to add another one this year. We think we got that booked, and we don't want to start eating into one another. But I think adding another one next year, during next calendar year, mm-hmm. would be easy for us to do.
Right. And I appreciate that, because, I mean, whatever we do here, if we do anything in this committee, it's going to go down the joint ways and means. We're going to have to reformat, rework it, and as you know, we're at the end of the wire. It may or may not happen, but we're trying to at least keep the conceptual idea alive, and I do appreciate you reaching out to the Senate Veterans Committee. I'm not sure what happened on the far side. I had the discussion with the chair, and I don't know. Madam Vice Chair, question?
Yeah, I was wondering why this was taken out on the House side.
I did not get a straight answer. Other than watching the tape, and the tape wasn't exactly friendly. We'll just
I went to the first hearing in case they had questions for me. They didn't. I didn't go back for the work session, but my accounts of it are that it became very contentious from a number of people, and I don't know that it's clear exactly what happened and why.
Because Chair, it's gambling?
Chair Boquist, Senator Meyer
Anderson.
This is a raffle,
not gambling.
I think most of the there was broad support for the concept of what we wanted to fund. Not much discussion on the lottery nature of that funding. But some sense, given the short timeline and a short session, I think some signals, they were concerned that it might not have the ability to get passed further down the line, so they wanted to make some amendments to get some other things passed for veterans legislation beyond just a hope. They thought it was going to have less success down the line, I think, and they wanted to use that bill for other purposes. But I think The chairs found some other homes for those amendments that they were also looking to get passed, and I think much of their concerns would be addressed, I think.
And I think, Madam Vice Chair, I mean, we need to get bipartisan support in the basement to do anything. So, and that is not your question. I tried to figure out, and other than the deal of please try and put it back in, was, okay, how did this happen? And in this short session, I don't have an answer, and they didn't seem to have an answer either.
Mr. Director, you said that you would set a price and then sell these raffle tickets. Who determines that prize pot?
We do, although under our constitutional authorization, basically half the money has to go back in prizes. So what we've done is we sell 250,000 tickets at $10 a ticket, so they've been running about 2.5 million. And then the prizes all total, they have $1 million jackpot, then they have other prizes. So it gets down to about half of that goes back to the players. Then there are commissions to the people who sell them, and there are other expenses. Now, that is one thing I will tell you, that I've been hearing the number 1.1 million thrown around. When I've looked in the past, that's not what the final profit margin. It's maybe between $650,000 to $750,000. Still good money for veterans, but that's how we do it. And as I say, we have a long experience with this. We think we're very successful with it, and we think that this would be an opportunity for us to show how we can do it well.
So basically you said that you sell 250,000 tickets. Is this what you'd normally do in a raffle? Is it typically 250?
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically, we do everyone the same. We just have different, we do it around different holidays to try to use that as part of our marketing strategy and to do that. And we spread them out through the year so that, this is mostly anecdotal. We haven't done any real statistically valid surveys, but it seems that raffles draw a lot of people who are not normal gamblers. Mm-hmm. That it's sort of a fun thing, and it's around a fun atmosphere, and so that's why we think that we can't do too many of them, and we need to tie it to something that's interesting. And frankly, part of the reason why we'd like to show how we do this is that I think, and these have not been terribly successful in other places around the country. The state of Washington did 2 years in a row trying to do veterans raffles. In the first year, the sales were so poor, they spent $1 million marketing them, so when they were done, they had no money left for veterans. The next year, they decided to learn from that mistake and committed the opposite mistake of not marketing them at all. They only sold half their tickets. And I think that's because they were making their sales pitch entirely about the veterans. And our sense is that people don't buy raffle tickets out of gratitude or guilt. They buy them out of greed, for want of a better term. They're buying because they want to win. If you just wanted to help the veterans, you'd write a tax-deductible check. But you buy the raffle ticket, you feel like you're doing a good thing, but you also want to win that $1 million. And that's really how you sell these.
One last question.
Is it a greed question?
Hey, this is a greed question, absolutely. Do you happen to know the appropriate six numbers for tonight's drawing?
No, I can assure you that there are a lot of things that they keep from us, and we have no knowledge about any of those numbers. But and of course, we can't play. Now that all the lottery employees, in fact, and their family members are banned from playing, but we're watching with great interest because it is it's a phenomenon that is really taking hold of the country, these large jackpots, and it's happening all around the world. It's really.
But we in Oregon seem to be precluded from collecting any of those funds, and I just.
You know, it's the old story when they added California to the Powerball, the math didn't work out terribly well for Oregonians. But we still have the same chance as every other individual. We just happen to have a smaller number of those individuals who happen to live in Oregon. But we would love to have a winner here in Oregon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions?
Chair Boquist, members of the committee, if I can just add, I want to thank the director for the flexibility of the lottery in both being able to meet their mission of raising revenue as well as being creative and flexible for options going forward. That's a huge plus for us in our veterans community. And I think the questions going forward in that, in the committees that will decide ultimately the fate, in looking at is it an annual nature, is it a replacement or not additional, and then being able to clearly dedicate what that revenue goes to off of the ticket identified as the Veterans Lottery. And I think in between the discussion on July 4th and Memorial Day, I just want to add that I think the celebratory nature of July 4th would likely be a better fit, and one that the lottery would likely land on, whether veterans or not. And the solemn nature of Memorial Day at some level in the veterans community, honoring our fallen from across the generations, is a little bit, would be not as good a fit as July 4th.
Right, and I think probably what we're talking about is giving them permission to do it if they believe it will work and if it falls into the model in a one time. I don't think there's anybody here saying, go do that. It's more of a case of here's the option, here's the authority, do we think it'll work, and go down that line, if anything, at this particular point in time.
Great. Mr. Jerry, did you give any thought to November 11th, Veterans Day?
We did. I know originally that's what they were pushing for. The problem is that the dates that we typically have done this with, it switches from year to year, whether we do Halloween or Thanksgiving, but those are really big and successful ones.
Okay.
And that's too close. And so unfortunately that's why I agree with them on the Memorial Day. The only reason we even thought about that was because it could move, if you want it entirely in this biennium, that we could do that. But we agree that would be a harder one to craft the message around. We already do 4th of July successfully. Tying that into veterans is a natural.
Thank you.
Well, the other thing I would just point out again, all we need authorization for is to dedicate the funds. We can do these as many of these as we want, or we can run them however we want to. And so we're not asking, we don't need any kind of direction for that. But to say that if we do that, the funds will go there. That's where you come in, and that's your call on a policy matter.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that, gentlemen. Because we have a couple of topics in this bill. Is there anyone else in the room that wants to address this topic right here, which is the Veterans Lottery that we brought
in? And that's the Dash 4.
That's the Dash 4 amendment. Okay, if there's not, we're going to move on to another topic, which, what's the other next amendment we have?
Dash 5.
The Dash 5. The Dash 5's colleagues is... go ahead, Council, if you would please.
Mr. Chair, members of the
committee. At least one or two individuals want to talk about the Dash 5s that will come up and just help us explain it, if they would, please.
As a refresher, stating that private employers may prefer to hire and promote service members, that's active service members, veterans, surviving spouses of deceased veterans, and spouses of veterans totally disabled from enemy action or service-related accident.
If you would, please. And I know we have Mike Sullivan, Bill Cluding. Are you guys talking about this? What are you guys talking? Lottery, okay. Come up with a lottery. You didn't hear that. We're going to hold off on that. Anybody else want to talk about the lottery piece first so we don't get too confused? I apologize. So we're still on the Dash 4 piece.
Thank you, Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Mons Anderson, Senator Courtney, and Senator Olson. For the record, Bill Cluding, Carpenters Industrial Council, and a veteran. Appreciate the efforts that went forward to bring Dash 4 and Dash 5 to this good bill. Oregon can never, ever repay what the veterans have done for this state and this nation. I wish this state was financially sound where we could dedicate the X amount of dollars every year, but so far we can't do that. This is a start. Look what these veterans have went through. A lot of them joined on their own because they lost their job. A lot of them got called in, and when they did come home, their job had disappeared. We have more people coming home today, and hopefully we'll see an end to the ones that are going in. As far as fighting these wars. A lot of people, some people call this a handout. I call it a hand up. Again, I will say Oregon can never do enough to repay the veterans. Thank you.
Chair Boquist, Vice Chair Mons Anderson, President Courtney, and Senator Olson. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director of AWPPW. But my testimony is on the subject of veterans. And I want to applaud the effort of this committee's work and creativity, along with the counterpart on, in the other chamber. If only the federal government would listen to Oregon, we'd have a much better, better federal veterans department. I think the lottery is a very small price to pay for the great tribute that the veterans have done for this state and country. My understanding, and the director of the lottery is here, that the funds of the lottery aren't all dedicated. There's money out there. And it's horrible to think that you have to be so creative. You would think that things would be more genuine in the federal arena, but it is not so. And you might remember that it's been five sessions I brought up health care for veterans should be permanent funding, not discretionary. And I'll be back next year to bring it again. No word from the federal government. So I want to thank you for this effort, and I hope it happens. Thank you.
Yeah. Anybody share a question?
No.
Thank you, gentlemen. I have two other people signed up, which I'm assuming is on the other amendment, Tom Gallagher and Joel Fisher. Joel, what? Are you on one of the amendments?
Yes, that's fine.
So now we'll move back to the dash 5 minutes so we can stay straight. And, Council, you did explain the dash 5s. You want to just re-briefly explain them so that everybody's on the same sheet of music?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the private employer's expression of a preference for hiring or promoting veterans, active service members, surviving spouses of deceased veterans, and spouses of veterans who are totally disabled.
Somebody jump in.
Senator Boquist, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher with the Oregon Business Association. I'll be really brief. We think this is a good bill. A lot of our members would like to or are already in, having hiring practices giving preference to veterans, and they would like this bill to give them the protection to continue to do so.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, beloved President, PBA, Portland Business Alliance, supports the Dash 5s.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on anything related to 4023? We had anticipated that Representative Huffman would be here, but I don't see him, or it doesn't look like he's come in.
Mr. Chair, he was notified that the pieces that were being affected would be heard today, but he didn't commit to coming down.
Okay. All right. So, colleagues, where we are is we're still in, obviously, a public hearing, not moved to work session. The general discussion is whether and actually the 4 and 5 replace the existing amendment and send it down, refer it to Ways and Means, and continue to have the discussion with Senator Devlin and see if it can be worked like the other one. If it can't be worked and can't reach bipartisanship, then this is a topic we're going to take up in 2015. That's sort of where we are right now. So it's really up to the committee how the committee wants to proceed.
So you're saying that we should adopt the A5s and the A4s, which replace
the main bill.
The main bill, and then what's in the main bill will be worked in Ways and Means into another bill.
But what's in the main bill presently, that those pieces will be worked into three other bills that are actually out there in other committees right now. And their relating clauses are relating to the actual things that they have.
And hopefully,
versus them gutting and stuffing and literally a 30-second move on the other side and sending this fist up.
So even if we do put the two amendments in, this bill would still need to go down to Ways and Means.
Check. This bill would still need to go down to Ways and Means and still be worked. I've talked to our co-chair, Senator Devlin, about working that. And then, of course, once it's worked, then we have to have bipartisan agreement from our House members. And I guess at that point, we're going to find out why our House members didn't do what they said they were going to do.
So do we have a fiscal and a revenue statement on the A4s and the A5s?
And we are...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have an indeterminate fiscal and a revenue light on the dash A4. We have no fiscal on the A5 and a no revenue impact on the A5. So in order to adopt the A5 into the bill would involve suspension of rules for lack of having a fiscal, but the A5 is ready as is.
And the lack of a fiscal would mean it goes to Ways and Means for them to finally do the fiscal.
Exactly.
If you move it with the A4, then that comes with the subsequent referral, and it would.
Right.
Well, my preference would be definitely to do that, but I want to make sure that the other members of this committee would agree to that if we suspend the rules to send this down to Ways and Means without a fiscal.
I know that we've coordinated with the president's office and the president's staff, and we can do that if the members are so inclined.
Correct.
I'm inclined.
Okay. With that, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4023. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 4023. And the first thing we would need to do, okay, walk us through this.
Chair Boquist, I move to suspend the rules so that we... Or do I do that now?
Yes.
Suspend the rules in order to consider the dash A5 amendments that do not have a fiscal to be put into House Bill 4023A.
Madam Vice Chair, Monasanders moves to suspend the rules for the intent of moving a bill without a fiscal down to Ways and Means. For the record, we have coordinated this with Ways and Means, and we have coordinated this with the President's Office. It does require a two-thirds vote in order to do that. Since it's internally, is there any further discussion? Is there any opposition? Let the record reflect that there was no opposition with four members present, so it has a two-thirds vote.
Okay. You'll have to do this twice, once for each set of amendments, the dash A4 and the data
here. Oh, this one was for the A5.
And the A5 and the data are here.
Since the other was for the A5, Chair Boquist, I move to adopt the A5 amendments dated 2/18/14.
Honorable Madam Vice Chair Mona Sanderson moves to adopt the A5 amendments dated 2/18/14. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Boquist, I move to suspend the rules so that the committee can...
We have a fiscal on that one.
Oh,
we don't need to suspend
the rules. Good.
Oh, the A4s? Yeah. Okay. So, Chair, I move the dash A4s dated 2/17/2014 into Senate Bill House Bill 4023.
Madam Vice Chair Mona Sanderson moves to adopt the A4 amendments dated 2/17/14. Is there any discussion, any opposition? Seeing none, so ordered. Now we're ready.
Chair Boquist, I move House Bill 4023 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to be referred to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means, on Ways and Means.
Madam Vice Chair Mona Sanderson moves House Bill 4023 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Before I ask if there's any discussion, again, for the record, it will go down to Ways and Means. We have pre-coordinated this with the President's office, and if we can't work it and find agreement in Ways and Means, this issue will come back to us in the next session. Is there discussion, Madam Vice Chair?
No.
Mr. President? Seeing no discussion, call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Monsanderson?
Aye.
Chair Boquist?
Motion passes. The bill will be sent to the Joint Committee in Ways and Means. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4023. Colleagues, that wraps up everything that came to the House, everything we have in our possession. I assume the theory is we could be at the call of the chair. I don't have any reason to believe that the call of the chair will be used between now and 5 p.m. on Friday. However, I do remind everybody that we do have an informational hearing scheduled towards the end of the month. And so keep that on your calendar. We're still working on that, trying to coordinate dates that will probably be condensed into one date. And for the record, I have communicated with the Adjutant General, and I'm recommunicating with the Deputy Military Department that we will not have death by PowerPoint. When they give us an update, we'll have a clear, concise educational meeting during that work session. With that, I would convey my thanks to the Director of the Lottery and the Director of the Veterans Administration, and we will be working closely together in the next couple of days to see if we can find something that is amenable to our colleagues in Ways and Means. With that, is there any further announcements or business? Seeing none, the committee is adjourned.